like to hear the vitamins. I need about some food. I can't remember why, but I need a spool of thread. Well, a man with dirty dread, he steps around the corner. He asked me for a dime, a nickel or a quarter. I don't have any change, so I'm stepping along. But as I'm walking past, he sings to me a song. These are holes in the bucket. I'm humming the song. The buses and the people, I'll keep moving along. To the shopkeeper, I say, what's up? And I'm thinking about the man who's holding up the cup. I pay for all the stuff and get a pocket full of change. Well, should I give it to the man? The question in my brain. What's gonna happen if I give the man a dime? I don't wanna pay for another brother's wine. What's gonna happen if I give the man a quarter? Will he find a dealer and try to place an order? What's gonna happen if I give the man a nickel? Will he buy some food or some pork that's been pickled? I'm not responsible for the man's affection. How can I find compassion in the midst of a recession? How can all these questions keep with my head? And I still can't remember why I need a spool of thread. There's a hole in the bucket.
KVOO in Portland, 90.7 FM. This is Hole in the Bucket, KVOO's new show on poverty, housing, and homelessness. Hole in the Bucket is on 6 to 7 o'clock, the first and third Wednesday of every month. We will only have one show in July, oh poor you guys, and that will be on Wednesday, July 3rd. Here on Hole in the Bucket, we incorporate the voices and ideas of people who have experienced poverty and homelessness into every show. The subject of today's show is street youth, and later on we are going to be talking with some youth and workers from PEAR, an arts, education, and recreation program working with homeless and transitional youth. We also have a Hole in the Butt Award, our first ever, but first we are going to have some news updates on the proposed changes to the drug-free and prostitution-free zone ordinances, as well as an update on Portland's community gardens. So if you will remember, about a month ago on Hole in the Bucket, we talked about some changes that were being proposed to the drug-free zone ordinance, which is due to be reauthorized this summer. We also mentioned that the prostitution-free zone ordinance would be up for reauthorization. So as an update to that, the Portland Police Bureau has indeed asked the city to reauthorize the drug-free zone and the prostitution-free zone with substantive changes. The changed ordinances must be reviewed by the City Council and will be officially renewed sometime this summer. No date has been set yet for City Council consideration. In a memo from the District Attorney's Office, the same three changes were outlined for both the drug-free zone ordinance and the prostitution-free zone ordinance. The first will be that when a person is arrested for probable cause in a drug or prostitution-free zone, they will be banished only from the zone where they are arrested, instead of from all the zones, as is the current practice. The second change is that arresting officers will ask the excluded person if they need a variance at the time of arrest, instead of forcing them to go through an application process later. The exclusion form will have a box the officer can check for a variance right on the exclusion form. A new crime, the crime of violating the terms of a variance, would be instated. That's the third change, and this is a whole new crime. It's a new enforcement mechanism, and this is to get around the ruling that happened in February that requires police to warn people before trespassing them. So what this has done is it's basically taken the teeth out of the drug-free zone ordinance, because police have to say, you have an exclusion, you can't be here, giving people a chance to leave. And that had caused a lot of worry in the Old Town neighborhoods and in other neighborhoods. So this new mechanism would be a new crime so that people will be charged with violating a variance. So that would also effectively decrease the chance of a future constitutional challenge to the zones, in effect protecting the zones. In addition to these three changes, the memo from the district attorney's office also mentioned that other non-substantive language changes are also being proposed, along with changes to the boundaries of the drug and prostitution free zones. The Beach residential drug free zone in North and Northeast Portland, for example, would be enlarged, while the Alberta and Woodlawn residential zones would be mostly eliminated because drug arrests have dropped so much there. The drug-free zone would also be expanded to include Trendy Northwest 23rd and the Lloyd District. The memo, however, does not address concerns that police are currently not required to grant variances to places of worship, residences of loved ones, shops, recreation, public transportation hubs, or a wide range of other lawful activities. The memo also does not address concerns over extremely inflexible variance routes, and does not specify what the penalties for violating the new crime of violating a variance will be. As with most ordinances, the effect of the changes will depend on the details of their implementation. The District Attorney's Office is currently presenting the proposed changes to neighborhood groups. I have here a sample form letter of support written by the District Attorney's Office so that neighborhood groups can just fill in the blanks with their name and send it in to Commander Rosie Sizer and the City Council, saying yes to the proposed changes to the drug and prostitution-free zones. It says, Dear Commander Sizer, on blank date, the blank Neighborhood Association received a presentation regarding the new drug-free and or prostitution-free zones from representatives of the Portland Police Bureau and the District Attorney's Office. We would like to take this opportunity to thank you for the presentation and inform you that we support the drug-free and or prostitution-free zones as they were presented to us. Please feel free to include this letter in any record before City Council. So if this letter is any indication, the changes will probably pass. Next, I am going to turn the mic over to Jay Thiemeyer, who you have heard on the lovely Bucket O' Food Review. Today he's going to be telling us a little more about some changes that are going on with Portland's community gardens.
Good evening. Originally, I was interested in getting an emergency food box and called the number which I got from the resources section of Street Roots, 2820555. It was the end of the month, and my food stamps were out, and so I was in need of food. And as a result of the call, I wound up talking to Cassandra Garrison, who is with Kim Thomas and a number of others, is integral to the Oregon Food Bank. And she told me about an event which actually took place this past weekend involving garnering support for the homeless garden at Woodward and 21st Street, which is near the People's Food Co-op and near where I live. At this event, roughly $500 was raised, which was a substantial contribution compared to the small out-of-pocket money that has been accumulated over the 2 years that the garden has been in existence. At the same time, they accumulated five sheets of signatures of interested people who can come by and help keep the garden up and spread the word. The lot was a barren lot before it being used as a garden, and now the owner of the lot has plans to quite possibly sell it in November. The mother of the owner, Marjorie Newsom, is one of the sponsors of the garden and has a long history as a supporter of poor folks, has worked on the streets in Old Town and so on, along with her parents and her parents' parents, and has been very focused on empowerment of the homeless, which is the whole point of this garden. Sponsors, along with Marjorie and Brian Newsom, included the Portland Nursery, the Oregon Food Bank, Daily Grind, and PACT, which is a welfare rights organization. Political Action Team is what PACT stands for. Roughly at this time, the garden has received help from roughly 100 people a week. They gather at different times during the week, but in particular, homeless folks who are directed to the garden from JOIN, the Community for Involvement, come over between 10 and 12 on Fridays. That'll be continuing through the summer. The garden project hopefully will evolve into a sort of a craft and skill training operation as well, with contributions from the Trillium Artisan Center and the Rebuilding Center, which for the event this past Saturday provided materials to build trellises for the vines and also frames for the plants, such as the tomato plants and so on. A banner remains on the fence surrounding the garden, which reads, "Community begins with you." The ultimate product of the garden, of course, is goodwill. The garden is run by and for the homeless folks. It's especially important to have a community effort like this to provide nutrition to people who are, in particular, the floating population of people in that neighborhood, speaking of that specific garden, who are pushing their carts and don't get a chance to really eat good nutrition. Since the Welfare Reform Act of 96, the number of emergency food boxes, such as the one that I was asking about, have increased dramatically, almost doubling during the past 6 years. And speaking of budget crunches, I would like to provide a correction about regarding the Janus Youth Access and Assessment Center, which was reported as closing as of the 1st of July. It will not close. The drop-in center will close, largely due to a budget crisis. However, the center itself will remain and still provide services, not 24/7, but from 11 till 10 in the evening. And that whole situation, which is indispensable to a population of street youth who have nowhere else to go now, is up in the air and will be reassessed for future budget arrangements at the end of this year. Thank you very much. This is Jay Thiemeyer.
Thank you, Jay. So it sounds like if people want to get involved with the community garden, can they go to JOIN?
Anyone is welcome. They just show up between 10 and 12 every Friday or contact JOIN or the Oregon Food Bank, 282-0555, and they're welcome to contribute.
Right on. Thank you. So contact JOIN or the Oregon Food Bank if y'all want to go garden. Okay. Next, I'm going to do something that we haven't done before, and I'm calling it the Hole in the Butt Award. And I did clear that with my news director. It's okay to say hole in the butt on the radio, so I don't want to get any calls from irate people listening, okay? Have a sense of humor, people. The Hole in the Butt Award is going to be given to those who find themselves on the wrong side of the class war. It's not a good place to be, folks. And today's award goes to the Portland Tribune. Yes, the Portland Tribune, who yesterday published not one, but two lame stories perpetuating stereotypes against low-income and homeless people. The first was splayed across the front page. St. John's confronts street drinkers and street drunks are a blight. It soon becomes clear that the article is about homeless people. When the article brings up shopkeepers and their horror stories about bedraggled men drinking cheap liquor on public sidewalks, passing out on benches, urinating in doorways, defecating on the streets, harassing customers for change to buy booze, and littering in parking lots and alleys. However, instead of addressing the serious issues of alcoholism, or the lack of public restrooms, or adequate shelter, the article focuses on local shopkeepers and their neighborhood's tarnished image. In the slick fashion reminiscent of that journalistic mainstay, The Oregonian, Anderson writes, "Merchants along Hawthorne Boulevard have seen an increase in street drinkers, panhandlers, break-ins, and other property crimes that affect business and livability." Bucket listeners, don't you just love how panhandling has always slid right in there with theft, assault, the downfall of the Western economy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? I love that. So the article goes on to say that the alcohol vendors in St. John's are trying to pacify the neighborhood association by proposing refusing service to any liquor-buying customer who cannot show photo identification, which includes a lot of homeless people, by the way, thereby differentiating between selling to street drinkers, typically transients, and other customers. Ooh. They're also suggesting, quote, paying to ship the offending bunch of people to another city. I did not make that up. That's right in there. So maybe this hole in the butt award should be jointly shared with the St. John's liquor merchants, along with the Tribune. If you would like to have a talk with Miss Anderson about her journalistic priorities, please email her at janderson, just like it sounds, A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N, at portlandtribune.com. But keep your pen handy, because there's more to this award. On the front page of the Portland Life section, Joseph Gallivan writes enthusiastically about the yuppification of the Stadium Fred Meyers in Northwest Portland. He writes that while before the Stadium Fred's name was synonymous with can collectors, baffled seniors, and brush pan displays, its new remodel has made it safe for, quote, tan-legged yuppies in running gear. He goes on to write that after a slump in the 90s, which saw the store degenerate into a gloomy bunker, stocked with Kroger-dictated products and stalked by homeless types, it has been ripe for a comeback. I can't even say that without laughing. This apparently wasn't offensive enough, though, because he goes on, so what of the area's notorious homeless shoppers in the brighter, friendlier Freddy's? One young mother of four enthused that the store now felt safer. One time in this line, this homeless guy put his dirty sleeping bag right down on my purchases. I was like, ugh, no, please. Luckily, the article reports the Fred's is still welcoming of gentlemen of the road. That was a quote. As long as they don't swear or bring their homes in with them. So I wonder where they're supposed to leave their homes. Anyway, if you would like to contact this author and thank him for his unbiased and sensitive reporting, you can email him at jgallivan, that's J-G-A-L-L-I-V-A-N, at portlandtribune.com. That concludes our Hole in the Bucket. I'm sorry. I got to get used to saying that. That concludes our Hole in the Butt Award, given to those who find themselves on the wrong side of the class war. Be sure to get our contact information at the end of the show if you would like to nominate someone. That concludes that. All right. And now I have the pleasure of introducing some guests that I have with me here today. The subject of today's show, as I said earlier, is street youth. And today we're going to be talking with some workers and youthful patrons of PAIR. And that stands for Program, Education, Arts, Recreation. PAIR's goal is to build positive relationships with homeless and transitional youth through education, art, and recreation to affirm personal worth and achieve meaningful and healthier lifestyles. And the key word there, I think, is building relationships, which is something that's not done at your typical social service agency. So this is a whole different ball of wax, folks. And who I have with me here today is Pippa Arend. Did I say that right?
No.
How do you say it? You say it.
It's close. Pippa Arend.
Pippa Arend. Hey, that sounds better. Pippa Arend, the assistant director of PAIR, and Beth Burns, the program director. And also here with us is Ed Muckenthaler. Oh, I said that right. A young artist who is a patron of PAIR and has experienced homelessness. And also we have Bryce Bugby. a recovery transition advocate at Metamorphosis. That's a new program. And also, he's a graduate of Greenhouse Alternative Learning Center, a stellar graduate, I'm told, and a friend of PEAR. And Bryce has also experienced homelessness. So thank you, everyone.
Thanks.
Well, let me just start out by asking you, why PEAR? Why did PEAR form? When did you guys open? Let me just say that.
We opened February 1st, and we opened because there was a number of other programs that were obliged to close, of which we were a part, and we felt it important to have a place for youth that was safe, though there are other places that, of course, are safe.
Okay. hi, here we go. PEAR opened, as Pippa said, in February 1st, and basically it came out of sort of a grassroots movement by a bunch of volunteers and community members who were interested in building a program that focused mainly on education, art, and recreation. And so we gathered up a bunch of support, as we said, from the community and found a space and sort of opened the doors in February and are now, we kind of went in with a pretty loose plan and have, with the assistance of the youth, have really allowed it to develop itself, to have its own identity and to create the power that needed to be there for the kids.
So the youth have played an integral role in forming it from the ground up?
Well, yeah, specifically, well, yes, of course, through their word, but also just through what they bring to the program, through their talent and through their beauty, through their words, through their passion, and through their innate ability to create a space for themselves that is important to them. I feel like they have a lot of, that there's been, they're able to take a lot of ownership in PEAR. We're run on a really small staff, an unpaid staff of three of us, and so we need not only a bunch of volunteer support, but we really need the support of the kids, of whom help us do the cleaning and the food service and some of the other basic things that need to get done.
So in part because you don't have a big paid staff, you've actually kind of been forced to bring in some labor from your patrons, which I think is interesting because the social service model says, I hand you something, I give you something, but you don't have anything to give to me, you client. And your circumstances have made it a totally different thing, it sounds like.
Yeah, we've tried to create a space that has been empowering for the youth and where they're allowed a lot of personal freedom and choices. And it's not only the youth that have helped us create this, but we are really interested in seeing what a grassroots, community-based, small program would look like. And so we're supported by local artists, waiters and waitresses, small business owners, people right in the community, local newspapers and radio stations, as well as other nonprofits. So it's been an incredible collaborative effort, and so far it is, it's been a very inspiring place, I think, for all of us.
And the youth help us there as well, and what that looks like is, for example, in the morning when we need milk, I can give a kid $2, tell them to go down to Rite Aid, bring back a receipt and some milk, and they'll do it. And they enjoy the responsibility. I enjoy getting the milk without having to leave. It works out really well.
And are these youth who are experienced or who have experienced homelessness?
Who are homeless.
Who are homeless?
A lot of them, yeah.
So you're giving money to homeless kids and you're sending them down to the store with the idea they're going to come back with that milk.
And they do.
And they always do.
They always do.
Right. Well, it goes against conventional wisdom now, doesn't it? What we just heard from the Tribune, you know, that homeless people are thieves.
Raiding the stores. I think another really important aspect of PEAR is, as we said, this idea of trust. And it's not just us trusting the youth, but it's the youth trusting us as well. And creating a community that's open and honest.
How do you perpetuate trust at PEAR?
We use, the education, the art, and recreation, as well as the other programs, we use those as mediums to develop relationships. We talk about the art. We talk about what interests each child individually, as an individual. And through those discussions, we find beautiful avenues to create positive relationships. It's a joy. That part, though it takes effort, is not work.
So by building just human relationships with people, mm-hmm. that's the key to any change that's going to happen?
Well, we believe that to proceed in life, to go on, you need a certain sense of self-esteem, that good decisions can come from a place of self-esteem and social and personal self-worth. So we just try to provide opportunities in which self-esteem can be developed in these trusting relationships, as we often play the role of cheerleaders for their art or for their efforts, whatever those look like for each individual, and be a sounding board. It takes a lot of different guises.
And it's quite amazing. I mean, it's not only are the young people that access our program, but also ourselves. I mean, I think we're all trying to discover what we inherently have to offer the world. And I think it's become a journey for all of us. And it's, you know, trying to cultivate a new idea of self, a new valuation of oneself. And we see education, art, and recreation, again, as Pippa said, as ways to start building this concept of oneself in a more positive way, to start building the needed and necessary self-esteem without judgment.
Mm-hmm. And you guys, it sounds like, are participating in that growth too yourselves.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, it's kind of a radical idea. You know, I just
right.
want to make that.
Well, you know, it's a poetic, chaotic, passionate, healing, forgiving, you know, kind of a wild experience every minute, and it changes that quickly. And so it's a learning experience for everybody, as well as it being a young, new program, and really just trying to figure out what it needs to look like and what the true needs are of the kids mm-hmm. and of ourselves.
So as the kids, the young people, Bryce and Ed, are you finding that they are building the trust and the relationship and doing all of these things? I mean, what is it like from your side?
I think that they've had a lot of practice at that. They've been doing it for quite a few years now, from when they were even teaching at the Greenhouse Alternative Learning Center. And I think that all that PAIR has allowed them to create a situation, almost the perfect situation, in which you can make someone feel worth more than just the art. Because if you go to a program and you do art, and people praise you, they're like, that's such good art, you know? I mean, and then you walk away, and you're like, I feel good with that one thing. And here, they're like, wow, that's really nice. Let's frame it, let's hang it up, and let's put a price on it, you know, just for you. I mean, which for a person who's coming from the street, who's been told a lot of their life, you're trash. I mean, if you're spare changing on the street, oftentimes people, they don't even look at you. You don't exist. I mean, and so to go into a place and have people say that not only are you worth something, but that side of you that's creative and that loves to do things is worth so much that, like, we're willing to show you how much, and the community has responded, and it's made people feel worthwhile, and I think that's awesome.
In particular, what Bryce is referring to there is that PAIR has a gallery on site, and each month we open a first Thursday event, and it turns into quite a party atmosphere. We often try to have music and spoken word, and we display the youth's art as well as at least one local community artist, which is a great way for a young artist or an old artist, but an aspiring artist, whomever it may be, to get, you know, to show their work. And we show it right alongside, mixed in with the kids. And the goal is not necessarily to sell the art, although it's quite helpful for some of the kids. But again, the goal is looking at integrating and working with the community in a different way. And if we are claiming that this is a community effort, you know, is one brilliant way to interact with the larger community.
So part of the community effort is donated meals And, I mean, you guys get lunch donated every day, right?
Yeah, we have our food program at Pear, which is called the Bread and Butter and Lots and Lots of Jam program.
Thank you, E. Cummings.
Thank you, E. Cummings. It involves breakfast each morning donated by Noah's, Starbucks, and Marcy Bakery.
The Marriott.
The Marriott. Thank you, Marriott. And then our lunch program involves hot, fresh lunches donated by local restaurants. Almost each day we have it. We pick it up at 11:30. These restaurants include Higgins, Old Wives' Tales, Old Town Pizza, really nice restaurants around town.
I'm incredibly grateful
for
their help.
Incredibly grateful.
Yeah, sounds awesome. I want to come over and eat.
Yes, well fed. Underpaid, but well fed.
So, okay, walking through the door of Pear, I'm going to ask Ed and Bryce, as youth, like, what do you see? Like, what is the building like? What is the reception like? What is the atmosphere like? If you've never been through the door, tell me what I'm going to see.
The atmosphere would have to be the biggest thing. Street youths as a whole have a problem no matter where they go with feeling equal with the staff, or there's always a big breakdown between the staff and the youths who are actually there. Where at Pear, again, it's more you're dealing with equals here. They're helping you. You're helping them with things. I mean, like that. I mean, it's more just amongst equals than having to worry about, well, you're them, we're us, and that's total breakdown. It's barrier in between. The building itself is we have a fairly large open area, computer access for the kids in the morning, easels and things for writing, sketching, drawing, fabric. We have one girl making a dress right now. I mean, anything you can imagine. Tools for the kids, things they can't get near anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot bigger of a trust issue, like Pippa said, which in turn lets the kids do more because, well, if you're not going to be trusted, then why should you act like you should be trusted in a lot of the places the kids' mind?
Yeah, and I think that, they definitely have rules, but I think that the following of the rules and the way that they treat people around them is more based upon mutual respect. And that completely turns it upside down from what normally happens at a program. Because when you walk in the door, you can almost feel that in the air because people feel comfortable with themselves. They feel comfortable to share their inner art, so to speak, which is not something you want to do everywhere, you know, because sometimes it's a real vulnerable position to put yourself in. And that's part of the trust that's there. And that's part of what kind of just hangs in the air that it's just, you can almost see it as you walk in.
So, okay, I want all the social service providers in the audience to listen right now. What exactly do they do? Can you tell me a story about something they did that made you feel that you were an equal and not somebody receiving a service?
Right from when you first walk in the door, I mean, your first time there, it's more of a gathering place for the youths than it is any sort of program or institution or anything like that, which changes it all on end right there. I mean, you're feeling relaxed from the first moment you get there. I mean, it's not a matter of paperwork or set program schedule or anything like that. But, I mean, like I said, it's more of a gathering place where you're allowed to feel comfortable. I mean, you're not constantly being looked at, being interviewed or anything like a normal program would.
Right.
And I think that... Like a good instance is that in one place when if you get in trouble at a lot of places, it's a lot of paperwork, you know, because you didn't follow a rule or because you didn't do something. It's a lot of talking to a lot of people you don't know. Whereas here, it would be like if I went over to my friend's house and I did something that was disrespectful to them, they would probably talk to me about it, you know, and we'd come to a conclusion as how to make things better. And I think that from what I've seen, that seems to be the difference here is that, I mean, with someone that you respect, you don't push them through a lot of things that you yourself wouldn't go through. Instead, you have a conversation with them, you try and resolve the issue, and you try and come to a complete and whole situation.
And I think, you know, the needs of the youth are extreme and diverse, and I think that one thing is just keeping an open mind to that and continually telling ourselves as we start each day, you know, when each kid individually walks in the door, it's kind of what is your need today? And we are so fortunate to be able to provide not only art and a variety of medias, but as well as in education. We do a lot of GED preparation and future planning for educational long-term goals. We have 2 youth in college right now, and we'll have 2 more starting in the fall. And we continue the relationship that we've built with these kids as they, these young people, as they continue through school. Another program that we plan on implementing soon is an outdoor recreation and wilderness program, and that will include things such as cross-country skiing, hiking, camping, just getting out. We believe that it's really valuable to leave the urban environment and to get out to nature and to experience life in a different way, often, because I like to play.
I like to play, too.
Yeah, and other little things we have, which are just, I think, are really important to all of us at the program, is we do a lot of cultural field trips, such as, you know, I mean, we get to become theater goers and opera goers and people who can really appreciate the art and culture that Portland has to offer. And
Cirque du Soleil, Whitebird.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many organizations that have stepped up and have given us tickets and have invited us to come see performances and shows and exhibits all throughout town. We have a community garden as well, which is a nice haven a little bit outside of downtown for us. And Bryce, although he's being modest, is not mentioned. He also helps co-teach yoga down at our space, which has seemed to be really a good thing for some kids whose bodies may be experiencing a bit of pain just due to diverse sleeping conditions that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, and just being kids.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, I've known Pippa and Beth for quite a while now. And when I met them first, it was interesting because in the systems, I hadn't met anyone like them. I mean, they were very friendly, very themselves instead of at work. And at the time when I met them, I was homeless, and I got started doing yoga. I remember going to a couple of plays. I remember going to an opera and getting to see these things and feel a sense of worth. I mean, a sense of being able to have fun again, because when you live in the life that's on the streets, it just gets so, so boring. I mean, it can be a lot of things, but it gets so boring. I mean, because it's the same thing day in and day out. Whether it's trying to get money through job hunting and trying to make yourself presentable in a situation that's really hard to be presentable, you know, because you're carrying your life with you a lot of the time, or whether it's trying to spare change on the corner. I mean, and then all of a sudden to have these people who are willing to say, come with us, you know, come do this and see these things and come listen to the orchestra, you know, come go cross-country skiing in the mountains. And the impact that had on my life, that people were willing to present this to me, is just like beyond belief. I would not be the person that I am now if it wasn't for that.
So just saying, you are worth beauty, and you are worth something beside the relentless daily grind, made a difference to you.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, big difference.
We certainly try to promote dignity and encourage growth in all of us that access the program, and that, of course, includes us. PEAR is a day program, and we just kind of see ourselves again as sort of an alternative, but more importantly, just as a complement to the already excellent services being offered for these youth involved in the homeless youth continuum and the other Portland area providers. They are very valuable, and we do always encourage people to continue supporting the work that they do. I wanted to add that before we continued.
And we need all the components.
We need all
in
the components, absolutely.
Services or youth, what? Nebulous amoeba of care.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're not really part of the official youth services continuum. So for those of you out there who don't know, there is something called a youth continuum. It's something that the county funds usually or always. And PEAR operates outside of that in that they don't receive county money, is that right?
That's correct.
Right. But they are a complement to many of those services. I was going to ask you guys, how is it a complement to other things that you can get in the city?
Well, a lot of times, when the other programs aren't open, PEAR is. You can't get food or something at another program, PEAR is. when they don't offer anything as far as day things to keep you busy or anything like that. Paris, you can go there for things like that. When kids are getting hectic with dealing with staff, people they don't know, or where, like I said, it's just a breakdown of staff and the actual youths that go there, they can go to Pear and they have that friendliness. I mean, it's, like I said, more of a gathering. Because of the positive atmosphere, because of the mutual respect, you build up a sense of morality, which is extremely lacking amongst the street youths, and just simple things like that.
They don't sound so simple. They sound pretty big.
Yeah, and I think, and even if, I mean, even just practical sense, if I'm sick with pneumonia because I've been sleeping underneath the bridges, and so I'm sleeping in the shelter every night, and I can't make it to Outside In when I wake up. I can't make it to New Avenues because I just can't walk that far. I mean, I feel so sick that I walk every 10 feet and I puke. I mean, that kind of a situation. And they go in and they sit down at Pear because it's not quite as far away, which seems silly, but, I mean, it makes a big difference also.
We are quite blessed with our location.
Where is your location?
The address, the street address is 801 Southwest Alder. It's on the corner of Park and Alder. Our gallery is right next door at 809 Southwest Alder. And our next opening, by the way, our next First Thursday art show, which features Jamila Hart and Jefferson Treacy and all our wonderful artists at Pear, that's on First Thursday, which is the 4th of July.
Woo-hoo.
So make it part of your firework experience to come down to the Pear Gallery between 6 and 10 o'clock. Come every First Thursday and support the youth.
So every First Thursday you can go to Pear and look at work done by youth who have experienced homelessness?
And the youth get to keep the majority of the proceeds, which is, it's been wonderful.
It's like 90%, right? 90% of the proceeds go right to the artists.
Yeah, and the other 10% go to materials, framing supplies.
Do you gentlemen have art hanging there right now?
Bryce, I don't know if you do or not. The majority of what I do tends to be writing, poetry, short stories. I'm working on getting a federal grant for a novel, which I'm not sure I told Pippa about yet. Things along those lines more than actual art, which is a nice thing about Pear because it's not simply about pictures or sketches. There's people in there doing modeling. I can sit in there and do work, web design on the computer, or we can sit and write stories or poems or songs and lyrics and play on guitars if we want to. I mean, even if it's not just like that, I mean, intellectual discussions, not just academic learning, but learning as far as philosophy, things like that go from other kids, actually having an intellectual debate with them. And there's so much to it just beyond the normal art.
And I do have a couple of normal art pieces in there that
normal art,
if you'd call it that, it's not
visual. They're questionable.
You know, the titles range from the thing that went "What if" to the death of a banjo.
I saw both of them.
Yeah.
Those are cool.
And it's those have become a permanent part of Pear. I think I don't
you
think they'll ever
back.
Give them back to me.
They took the personal signs off. How are you supposed to inform you?
I noticed that. They didn't inform me, but I figured, you know. And I'm fine with that, you know. And, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's nice. I mean, I remember someone telling me that they, some of the stuff they did with their money they got, like someone who sold a piece and they went out and they bought, like, new clothes so they could go job hunting and things like this, you know. And I mean, and it's really, like, a tool for empowerment. I mean, money can be such a bad thing in so many situations that you run into on the streets. And it's amazing, I think, because of the respect and because of the respect that people learn from this program sometimes and already have for themselves, for their art, they tend to spend their money on things that are more meaningful.
So they say, this is my art. This is the money I made selling my art. I'm going to take it and I'm going to spend it on something good.
That's what I've seen. I can't speak for everyone, I mean.
That's what I've done.
Another thing that's nice about it is the real esteem boost you get when you're just going into another local business or something around the area and says, hey, aren't you so-and-so? I saw this you did up there at Pear, and it was really great and everything. And just the self-esteem you gain from that and sense of self-worth that other people recognize that is just phenomenal.
And I think one thing that the gallery has also allowed us is this idea of just interacting with the community in a different way. I mean, they're not homeless and transitional youth in this setting. They're viable creators of art. They're worthy human beings, and they're, you know, they're people that are capable of growth and change and deserve to be as much a part of this community as any of us do. And
in what tends to be in the, well, some of the community's eyes, as well as a lot of the street youths, is because they're homeless, they're not part of the community, which it really ends up making a lot more of a union between the two and helps out the kids in that aspect as well.
To talk more about the art program also, we take donations of art supplies. Please.
We're also currently looking for cameras and any sort of darkroom equipment.
Yeah, we're starting a photography program called PairPix in July. It'll run through August. That art show will be the first Thursday of September. That comes out at the photography show. We supply all the materials for all the art, occasional instruction. One of the more spontaneous and interesting things that have come out of the art program for me is I like to draw, and on occasion I sit down with a youth and or two, and we'll draw each other. I'll draw them, and specifically what I'm talking about is not too long ago I asked a child to sit down because he was not seemingly able to at that time. He was, well, lots of energy. Anyway, he sat down. I started drawing him, and he looked at me and said, "No one has ever really looked at me before."
Oh, wow. This was a child?
Well,
young people.
a
young person.
A person. A patron.
Right.
Be careful
wow.
how you answer.
So is there anything else you guys wanted to plug before we end this?
We need a van for our recreation program so we can go to the beach.
We also really could benefit from volunteers. So if anyone's interested in helping to create this space, to help create an empowering space for all involved, please contact us at PAIR at 228-6677.
And can I add in something,
please,
whether they like it or not? If you have musical instruments,
yes,
that are getting old,
yeah,
and things like that, I mean, there's so many people there that are musically talented and so many people who wish to be, you know. And I think that that's something that, I mean, if you have an old instrument you're not going to use anymore, I mean, that's a great avenue to place it in because it will get used heavily.
Anything anyone can think of that would help inspire. Books, pictures, artwork, old magazines, mm-hmm, anything that can be used to help kids in any sort of fashion whatsoever would be muchly appreciated.
A helium tank.
A helium tank? Oh, for balloons.
Balloons.
A helicopter, a jet, and...
And a small island off the Caribbean, please.
But y'all don't ask for much.
No. Other things that could really benefit, too, is fruit and juice. Cash donations, office supplies, janitorial supplies. If anyone out there fancies themselves a musician, we really enjoy having music at the first Thursdays and are looking for people to volunteer and to play that evening.
Even for this next first Thursday,
we are making a call to all musicians. We also could really benefit from some outdoor recreation equipment, paper products, and tools. If you have any old tools in your basement, wire cutters, pliers, that's really helpful for the youth that really enjoy metalwork and chain mail.
Yeah,
art.
And a few more restaurants would be good. Out of the 20 business days, we have most of them covered, but there's a few days where we still could use restaurant donations.
We'd like to just thank everybody that has helped to support this program and will continue to help it change and grow, hopefully throughout the years, and especially to all the young people that we are so grateful for.
And enamored with.
Yes, and that access the program.
Thank you guys for coming. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time, and I have just a couple quick announcements. Tonight there is a film, and you guys here from PAIR might be interested in this, at Clinton Street Theater. It's about riding the rails, and specifically about modern-day youth freight hopping. It's playing at Clinton Street Theater at 10:30 tonight. It's a sneak preview, so it hasn't been released nationwide yet. And it's going to be introduced by Sarah George, the director of the film, who is a freight hopper. And she'll be taking a few questions from the audience. So that's Catching Out. It's tonight at 10:30 at Clinton Street Theater. And that's at Southeast Clinton Street and 25th Avenue. between Southeast Division and Powell. And I believe it's $6. Also, there's going to be a Free Geek block party. And if y'all don't know what Free Geek is, it's a super great nonprofit that recycles used computers and technology and provides education, internet access, and computers to those in need, including computers that they donated to Dignity Village. So if you want more information about the Free Geek block party, go to their website at www.freegeek.org. That block party is on Saturday, June 29th, and it's noon to 8, so it's all day. It's in front of Free Geek. You can find directions on their website. It's 2.5 blocks south of Hawthorne. They're going to have music, square dancing, food, a sidewalk sale, and all kinds of stuff. So that's June 29th. Another great event, which I'm really excited about, is the Dignity Village Land and Freedom Benefit. That's to raise funds for its eventual home and permanent site. And that's going to be June 21st. That's the first day of summer. And at the Smith Ballroom, which is on the PSU campus, it runs from noon to midnight on the 21st of June. And system-wide, the Upright Dub Orchestra, perhaps Toots and the Maytals, for all of you reggae and dub fans, are going to be there. And tickets are $25, but it is on a sliding scale for folks that don't have a lot of money. And it's all ages. So do come out to the Land and Freedom Benefit at Dignity. And just a reminder that Food Not Bombs is still serving out awesome food, serving its message of prosperity and full, happy stomachs. They are out in the park blocks, the North Park blocks, on Wednesdays at 6, Thursday at 5:30 p.m. They're also out on the west side under the Burnside Bridge at 5:30 on Friday. And on Saturdays, they're at the North Park blocks at 5 p.m. So if you are hungry for some free vegetarian food that challenges the status quo, then head on out for some revolutionary Food Not Bombs chow. And that concludes today's show. Hole in the Buckets on 6 to 7 o'clock, the first and third Wednesday of every month. We only going to have one show in July, and that's going to be on July 3rd. And it's going to be a Dignity Village special, speaking of Dignity Village. So it's going to have the latest news on Dignity Village and guest appearances by your favorite villagers. If you want to send us your ideas or leads, go ahead and send them to kboobucket@yahoo.com or mail us at kboo at hole in the bucket at 20 Southeast 8th, Portland, Oregon, 97214. I want to thank Liam Delta, our engineer tonight, and also thanks to Jamie Manuel and J.C. Meyer for production assistance. And, of course, thank you to the workers and youth from PEAR. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you July 3rd on Hole in the Bucket here at KBOO Portland.
Stretch our conversation around our minds. Put me in your calendar, give me a number. Magnify me, let me have one day of your week. Tie me to the calendar that couldn't love you. Time came like water and swallowed me whole. Time came like water and swallowed me whole. Finding my way home. Break up and left off and finding my way home.